been the problem. Bane replied, "The Brotherhood must be purged. The Sith must be destroyed and rebuilt. You, Khan, and all the others must be wiped from the face of the galaxy. That's why I've returned." Dawning horror spread across Cordis's long, drawn features. "Please," he groaned. "Not, like this. Release me. Let me draw my lightsaber. Let us fight, like Sith." Bane tilted his head to the side. "Surely you know I could kill you just as easily with my lightsaber as I could with the Force."
No!
Cordis's skin was turning red, and his body was trembling as the pressure mounted. Each word he spoke took tremendous effort, yet somehow, the dying man found the strength to make his final plea.
"More honor in death by combat!"
Bane gave an indifferent shrug. "Honor is for the living. Dead is dead." A final push with his mind tightened the invisible vice. Cordis let out a final scream, but with no air in his lungs, it came out only as a rattling gasp that was lost beneath the snapping and crackling of his bones. Had Bane still been capable of such emotions, he might actually have pitied the man. As it was, he simply let the corpse fall to the ground, then wandered into Khan's tent and the communications equipment inside. It was time to enact the second phase of his plan. On the deck of Nightfall, great flagship of the Sith fleet, acting commander Admiral Adriana Nyriss responded to the hailing frequency coming from the private comlink on her wrist. "This is Admiral Nyriss," she said into it. "I await your orders, Lord Khan."
"Lord Khan is not here,"
an unfamiliar voice replied.
"This is Lord Bane."
She hesitated for only a second before answering. Khan rarely let anyone else use his personal transceiver, but on occasion it did happen. And with the security encryption on the equipment, it was virtually impossible for anyone else to tap into the frequency. The message had to be coming from the Sith camp, which meant she really was speaking to one of the Dark Lords.
"Forgive me, Lord Bane," she apologized. "What are your orders?"
"Status report."
"Unchanged," she replied, her voice sharp with military precision and efficiency. "The blockade is intact. The Jedi fleet still hovers just beyond our range."
"Engage."
"Pardon?" she asked, so surprised that she momentarily forgot whom she was speaking to.
"You heard me, Admiral. Engage the Jedi fleet."
The order made no sense. The last time Khan had spoken to her, he'd ordered her to hold their position at all costs. As long as they maintained location and orbit, their blockade was virtually impenetrable. If they broke formation and attacked the Jedi fleet, however, they wouldn't be able to stop dropships from landing reinforcements on the surface. Still, she had been given strange orders before during her service with the Sith. There were rumors that Khan had some mystic power, some way to influence the outcome of a battle through the power of the Force that could make traditional strategies fall by the wayside. And if a Dark Lord was giving her a direct order, using the personal communications equipment in Lord Khan's tent, she wasn't about to run the risk of refusing to obey.
"As you command, Lord Bane," she answered. "We will engage the Jedi."
The fire drove General Hoth and his army from the sheltering confines of the forest. Leaving most of their supplies and equipment behind, his troops ran through the trees, a mad scramble to escape the searing heat and flames. Those who stumbled or fell were instantly swallowed up by the conflagration. Somehow most managed to stay ahead of the deadly fires, eventually bursting out of the woods and into the rocky plains where so many battles had already been fought. The Sith were there, waiting for them. The first wave of Hoth's followers to emerge from the forest were mowed down by blaster fire. Those just behind were able to draw their lightsabers and deflect many of the deadly bolts as they raced out onto the plains,
only to be swallowed up by the throngs of Sith soldiers rushing forward to engage them. Though outnumbered, the Jedi more than held their own. They drove the Sith ranks back, breaking their lines and throwing them into chaos and disarray. But Hoth knew that the real trap had yet to be sprung. Hewing down any foe foolish enough to come in range of his lightsaber, the general could sense these were not the true Sith. The Dark Lords were not among them. These were the faceless hordes, nothing more than a distraction.
Where are they? What is Khan up to?
The answer came an instant later when a battalion of flyers swooped in over the horizon, unleashing a deadly barrage across the battlefield. Guided by the power of the dark side, the heavy guns were deadly in their accuracy, decimating Hoth's troops and turning the tide of the battle back in favor of the Sith. Hoth had faced impossible odds before and triumphed, yet he knew this battle was fated to be his last.
But I will make a last stand worthy of story and song, he thought defiantly, even though there won't be anybody left to sing it.
The world dissolved into the numbing fog of war. Screams and the sounds of battle became a dull, indistinguishable roar. The spray of dirt and stone from the blaster bolts exploding into the ground showered down on him from above, mingling with the sweat and blood of both friend and foe. He swung each blow as if it might be his last, knowing that sooner or later, one of the flyers would lock in on him and swoop down to finish him off. Lord Khan's flyer carved a path back and forth above the milling soldiers on the battlefield below, soaring over the chaos like a grim bird of prey. From his vantage point, it was clear the battle was theirs. Yet even though they were ill-equipped, outnumbered, and badly outgunned, the Jedi fought bravely to the bitter end. There was no hint of retreat, no breaking of their ranks. He couldn't help but admire such courage and such devotion to a cause, even in the face of certain death. If his own troops had been so steadfast in their loyalty and purpose, he would have won this war long ago. It wasn't that they lacked discipline. The Sith armies were just as well trained as those of the Jedi or the Republic. They simply lacked conviction. Too often their morale had been held together only by the sheer force of Khan's will. His battle meditation, strengthening their resolve whenever the situation seemed grim or desperate. But his battle meditation could only do so much. Against an entire army of Jedi on guard against the force powers of the Sith, it could do little more than instill a vague sense of unease. A small advantage, but one easily overcome. Here on the surface of this wretched world, the Brotherhood of Darkness and its minions had been forced to fight on their own merits, without his intervention. And far too many times, they had come up short. There had been occasions when he'd questioned the ability of his followers to succeed on their own. There were instances when he wondered if the Sith troops had become so reliant on the enormous advantage of his battle meditation that they'd forgotten how to fight effectively without it. But now at last, the ultimate victory had been achieved. The Jedi were making a last desperate stand, one glorious to behold, yet the outcome was inevitable. There was just one thing left for Lord Khan to do before the fighting ended. He continued to weave back and forth, firing sporadically at the enemy below as he searched for his real prey. Then at last he saw him. General Hoth, standing in the very center of the fray, surrounded by a bulwark of valiant allies and a relentless sea of Sith foes that broke against them again and again and again. Locking his flyer's guns on his target, he swooped in, intent on taking his rival's life in a spectacular strafing run. But a mere second before he fired, a massive explosion rocked his flyer, causing it to veer to the left. His shots carved a deep furrow in the ground several meters to the left of the general, leaving him miraculously unharmed. Hoth continued fighting as if he hadn't even noticed. But Khan banked his vehicle around sharply to see what had happened. Before he completed the turn, another explosion shook the sky beside him. and he saw one of the other flyers careen out of control and crash into the ground. He looked up, realizing they were under attack from above. A pair of massive gunships were descending on the battle, their batteries blasting the Sith flyers from the sky one by one. On the underside of each ship, the colors of Jedi Master Valentine Farfalla were clearly visible.
Impossible.
Khan cursed silently. There is no way they could have broken through the blockade. Not with ships like this. Yet somehow they had. Another series of blasts took out three more of the small flyers, and Khan realized it was his army that was now suddenly overmatched. The flyers were quicker and more maneuverable than the Jedi gunships, but their blasters wouldn't even make a dent in the larger vessel's heavily armored hulls. For a brief second, he thought he might be able to rally the other Dark Lords. If they concentrated their attacks, they might be able to bring the gunships down, though their own losses would be heavy. But he dismissed that idea as quickly as it had come. He wasn't the only one who had noticed the arrival of the Jedi reinforcements. Faced with overwhelming odds, the Dark Lords, under his command, had reacted in the only manner they understood. Self-preservation through flight. Already most of the other flyers had broken off their strafing runs and were executing evasive maneuvers intent only on escaping the battlefield alive. And with their lords and masters fleeing the engagement, the hordes of Sith soldiers on the ground would be quick to follow. Imminent victory was about to become disastrous defeat. Swearing vile oaths against both the Jedi and his own people, Lord Khan knew there was only one option left. Weaving and darting to avoid a pair of bolts intended to blow him from the sky, he joined the retreat. Chapter 29. General Hoth couldn't help but offer the ragged hint of a smile, despite the dead and wounded that lay scattered across the battlefield. The Sith had sprung their trap, and somehow, the Army of Light had survived. He recognized Farfalla's colors on the gunships that were now circling the field, keeping the Sith stragglers pinned down under whatever cover they could find, until the troops on the ground could surround them and demand their surrender. Most were quick to comply. Everyone knew the Jedi preferred taking prisoners over killing their enemies, just as everyone knew the Jedi treated their prisoners humanely. The same could not be said for the Sith, of course. A small convoy of personal flyers was emerging from the gunships, flying down to join the survivors on the ground. The general recognized Farfalla aboard the lead flyer, even as Farfalla caught sight of him and came in to land. The younger Jedi stepped off his flyer, not speaking but extending his hand by way of cautious greeting. He was dressed in clothes as bright and outlandish as ever, but for some reason it didn't bother Hoth as it once had. Hoth stepped over to him and clasped him in a firm embrace, causing Farfalla to laugh in surprise. Hoth only released him from the fierce hug when Farfalla began to cough and sputter.
Greetings, Lord Hoth, Farfalla said once he was released, making a deep bow and a flourish. Standing up, he gazed out across the battlefield, and his expression became more serious.
My only regret is we couldn't get here sooner.
It's a miracle you're here at all, Farfalla,
Hoth replied.
I'm afraid to even ask how you managed to run the blockade, in case this all turns out to be nothing more than the fevered dream of a doomed and dying man.
Rest assured, General. I am quite real. As to how we arrived, that is easy enough to explain. The Sith broke the ranks of their blockade to engage our fleet. With our capital ships drawing the focus of their cruisers and dreadnoughts, we were able to send several gunships down to your aid.
What about the rest of our fleet?
Hoth asked in concern.
The Sith had nearly double the numbers of your ships.
They held their own long enough for us to get through the blockade, then disengaged and retreated with surprisingly few casualties.
Good.
The general nodded. Then he frowned.
But I still don't understand why they would engage your fleet at all. It makes no sense.
I can only assume that they received orders to do so from someone here on the surface. Khan was on the verge of wiping us out, Hoth insisted. The last thing he would do is give the order to engage.
Both Jedi were silent for a moment, pondering the implications of what had happened. Finally, Farfalla asked, "Is it possible we have an unknown ally among the Brotherhood of Darkness?"
Hoth shook his head. "I doubt it.
More likely the Sith are finally beginning to turn on each other."
"It was inevitable."
Master Farfalla nodded his agreement.
"It is the way of the dark side, after all."
Khan was fuming as his flyer touched down back at the Sith camp. How could everything have gone so terribly wrong in such a short time? They had been on the cusp of victory, and now suddenly, they were on the knife's edge of defeat. He stormed across the camp toward his tent, ignoring the questioning looks of Githany and the others. They wanted an explanation, but he didn't have one to give. Not yet. Not until he got a status report from Admiral Nyriss. How did Farfalla break through the Kriffing blockade? His anger was so great that he didn't notice Cordis's flyer parked near his tent, or the droplets of blood scattered on the ground nearby. If he had, he might have searched the area and found the bodies stashed in the nearby undergrowth. But all of Khan's focus was concentrated on reaching his tent and the communications equipment inside. He found Bane there waiting for him, standing still as stone.
"Back so soon, Khan?" he asked. "What happened to your glorious battle?"
"Reinforcements," Khan snarled.
"Somehow, Farfalla found a way to break through our blockade."
"I told your fleet to engage the Jedi,"
Bane said, his words as casual as if he'd been discussing the weather. Khan's jaw dropped. He'd suspected treachery, but he wasn't prepared for the traitor to openly admit it.
"But why?"
"I wanted all the Jedi here on Rusan at the same time," Bane replied.
"You blasted fool!" Khan shouted, waving his arms madly, as if they were gripped by uncontrollable spasms. "Victory was ours! We had Hoth beaten!"
"That is your goal, not mine. I'm after a prize far greater than the death of General Hoth. He's but one man."
Khan barked out a harsh laugh. "We all know what prize you seek, Darth Bane. You're here to take over the Brotherhood."
Bane shrugged indifferently, as if it didn't matter one way or the other to him. He seemed so calm, so certain of what he was doing. It was all Khan could do to keep himself from leaping at the larger man's throat. Didn't he understand what he'd done? Couldn't he see that he'd doomed them all? Khan slumped wearily into a chair.
"If you lead them against the Jedi, you lead them to their slaughter."
Now it was Bane who laughed, a low, sinister chuckle.
"How quickly you've fallen into despair, Khan. It seemed only hours ago you were certain of victory."
"That was before Farfalla and his reinforcements arrived," Khan shot back. "Back when we had the advantages of numbers and air superiority. All that is gone thanks to you. We can't possibly defeat them now."
"I can," Bane vowed.
Khan sat up straighter in his chair. Again there was that unwavering confidence. Bane knew something he didn't. Some trick.
"Another ritual like the last one?"
he guessed.
"I know many rituals, many secrets, and I have the strength to use them."
Dread gripped Khan.
"The thought bomb,"
he breathed.
"Your leadership has failed," Bane declared.
"Now I will take the Brotherhood down the path to victory."
"And what of me?"
Khan asked, already knowing the answer.
"You can swear your loyalty to me with all the others," Bane told him. "Or you can die here in this tent."
Lord Khan knew he was no match for Bane, either physically or through the power of the Force. Yet he wasn't about to surrender so easily. not while he still had cunning, guile, and his unique talents of persuasion on his side. "Do you really believe the others will follow you?" he asked, pushing out with the force to plant the first seeds of doubt in his rival's mind. "They are still wary of you after your last ritual." A flicker of uncertainty passed across Bane's hard features. Khan increased the pressure of his invisible compulsions and continued to speak. "The Brotherhood is about equality, not servitude. Asking the others to bow down before you will only drive them away, or turn them against you." He rose from his chair as Bane nervously stroked his chin, weighing the arguments. "How do you think the others will react when I tell them how you orchestrated the arrival of the Jedi reinforcements?" Bane's dark eyes flashed angrily, and his hand dropped to the hilt of his lightsaber. "Killing me won't keep your secret," Khan warned him. "The others know you weren't at the battle when Farfalla's ships arrived. More than a few of them probably already suspect you of betraying them." Khan pushed even harder with the Force, trying to twist and warp Bane's very thoughts. "You may be the strongest among us, but you can't defeat us all. Not by yourself, Bane." The big man staggered and clutched at his head. He stumbled over to the chair and collapsed in it, the wood groaning under his massive frame. He hunched forward, hands pressing hard on his temples. "You're right," he said through tightly clenched teeth. "You're right. There's still hope, though," Khan said, stepping over and placing a reassuring hand on Bane's broad shoulder. "Follow me, and I will keep the others from turning against you. Join us in the Brotherhood." Bane nodded slowly, then turned his head to stare up at Khan with a desperate, hopeless expression in his eyes. "What about the Jedi? What about their gunships?" Khan stood, slowly releasing his mental hold over the other man. "We can nullify their air superiority by retreating into the caves," he said. "I know General Hoth. He will follow us. And there, we will unleash the thought bomb against them." Bane leapt to his feet eagerly. Khan was pleased to see that his powers of force persuasion were as strong as ever. Even Bane was not immune to his manipulations.
"I will do as you say, Lord Khan," he exclaimed. "Together, we will destroy the Jedi."
"Peace, Bane," Khan urged, extending tendrils of soothing calm. He had nullified the threat to his position that Bane represented, but he knew the effect was only temporary. In time, Bane's hostility would return, as would his dreams of usurping the mantle of leadership. Khan needed to find a more permanent solution. "Unfortunately," he said, "there are still complications."
"Complications?
I can convince the rest of the Brotherhood to forgive your treasonous acts, but only after the Jedi are destroyed. Until then, you will have to remain hidden from the others." The confused and hurt expression on Bane's face was pitiful, but Khan was used to eliciting such naked emotion in those he manipulated.
"I will lead the Brotherhood to the caves," he explained. "I am strong enough to join their minds and unleash the power of the thought bomb without your help. You stay here in the tent until nightfall, then sneak out of the camp. Stay safely out of view until the deed is done.
And once the Jedi are destroyed, you will return for me."
"Yes," Khan promised, his voice solemn. "Once the Jedi are gone, I will return for you with the full strength of the Brotherhood."
That much at least was true. He would leave nothing to chance. He wouldn't underestimate his opponent anymore. Bane had already survived one assassination attempt. This time, he would unleash the full numbers of his followers against his foe.
"I will do as you command, Lord Khan," Bane replied, dropping to one knee and bowing his head.
Khan turned and marched out into the camp, heading for his own tent where the pages containing the ritual of the thought bomb were hidden away. Bane stayed in the position of supplication until the Dark Lord was well out of sight, then stood up and brushed the dirt from his knees with a grim scowl. He had felt Khan's efforts to dominate his mind, but they had had no more effect than a rusted knife scraping against the hide plates of a Hallurian ice bore. Yet he had seized on the opportunity and delivered a performance worthy of the greatest dramatist on Alderaan. Khan was convinced the thought bomb was the key to Sith victory, and he was about to ensnare the rest of the Brotherhood in his web of madness. The second phase of Bane's plan was set in motion. By nightfall the next day, it would all be over. On the perimeters of the Jedi camp, patrols circled endlessly throughout the night, ever vigilant and watchful. It wasn't just attacks from the Sith they stood guard against, but also the invasions of the floating, fur-covered bouncers. The previously peaceful and docile native creatures of Rusan had been driven mad by the cataclysm that had swept through the forest. Before, they had been a familiar and welcome sight, gathering in groups over the sick and wounded to project images of comfort and healing. Now they emerged from the night's gloom in terrible packs, inflicting twisted nightmares that brought suffering, terror, and panic to all in the vicinity. There was nothing the patrols could do but shoot the tormented creatures on sight, before they spread their madness among the Jedi. A grim task, but necessary, as so many other things here on Rusan had been. Fortunately, the patrols had managed to keep the bouncers at bay, and the mood within the confines of the Jedi camp itself was one of cautious optimism. After the hopeless despair of the past months, their subdued enthusiasm almost felt like jubilant revelry to General Hoth. They were no longer the hunted, cowering in the depths of the forest, surviving only as long as they remained hidden. The Jedi had gained the upper hand. Their new camp had been set up on the open plains, along the edges of the very battlefield where the war had turned. And now, it was the Sith who'd gone into hiding. The General, though still exhausted by the desperate escape from the flames and the fighting that followed, refused to sleep. There were too many details to see to, too many things that needed his attention. In addition to organizing the patrols to protect against the bouncers, he also had to oversee the distribution of fresh supplies. Farfalla's ships had delivered desperately needed food, medpacks, and fresh power cells for blasters and personal shields. With most of their other stores lost to the unnatural wildfire that had devastated the forests, the General wanted to make sure all his troops were properly re-equipped and tended to before he granted himself the luxury of rest. He wove his way through dozens of dying campfires and scores of snoring bodies. They were still short on tents for the troops, but those without were more than content to spend the warm nights splayed out on the ground, sleeping beneath the open sky. "General!" a voice called out, surprisingly loud in the otherwise still night. Hoth turned to see Farfalla running toward him, sure-footed despite the darkness as he leapt nimbly over the slumbering soldiers in his way. Pausing to let him catch up, Hoth returned his now customary yet still extravagant bow with a courteous nod.
"Do you have news, Master Farfalla?"
The younger man nodded excitedly.
"Our scouts have spotted the Sith on the move. Khan is leading them east toward the foothills."
"Probably heading to the caves and tunnel systems," Hoth guessed. "Trying to take away our advantage in the air."
Farfalla smiled.
"Fortunately, we've already done some reconnaissance on the area. We know most of the major access points to and from the surface. Once they go into the tunnels, we can surround the exits. They'll be trapped."
Hoth stroked his heavy beard.
"It isn't like Khan to make such an obvious tactical mistake," he muttered. "He's up to something."
"I could instruct some of the scouts to follow them into the tunnels and keep an eye on them," Farfalla suggested.
"No,"
Hoth said firmly after only a moment's consideration.
"Khan will be watching for spies. I won't deliver any of our people into his hands for interrogation."
"Maybe we could starve them out," Farfalla offered. "Force them to surrender without any more bloodshed."
"That would be the best solution,"
the General admitted.
"Unfortunately, I don't think we can afford that kind of time."
He gave a deep sigh and a weary shake of his head.
"I don't know why Khan's heading into the caves. I just know we have to do something to stop him."
Resolve hardened his face.
"Sound the reveille and assemble the troops. We'll go in after him.
Not to question your orders, General, Farfalla began as tactfully as he could, but is it possible Khan is luring you into a trap?
I'm almost certain of it,
Hoth conceded.
But it's a trap he's going to spring sooner or later anyway. I'd rather not give him time to prepare. If we're lucky, we can catch him before he's ready.
As you command, General, Farfalla said with another of his grandiose bows. Then he added, You, however, should get some sleep. You look as pale and drawn as one of the Sith yourself.
I can't sleep now, my friend,
Hoth answered, placing a heavy hand on Farfalla's delicate shoulder.
I was here at the start of this war. I was the one who led the Army of Light here to Rusan to face Khan's Brotherhood of Darkness. I must see this out to the end.
But how much longer can you go without sleep, General?
Long enough. I get the feeling this will all be over by tomorrow's end. One way or another.
Chapter 30. The caves were cool and damp, but they were far from dark. The rock walls and ceiling were laced with crystals that caught the dim light from the glow rods, reflecting and refracting their illumination throughout the cavern. Small pools shimmered on the floor, and enormous stalagmites jutted up toward the roof. An inverted forest of stalactites hung down, water dripping steadily from their tips to splash and ripple the pools far below. In some places, the protrusions on the floor and ceiling had actually fused, joined by centuries of sediment deposits from the endless trickles of moisture. The enormous columns were magnificent, massive, yet at the same time delicate and fragile. Khan had no time to marvel at the natural beauty of their surroundings. He knew the Jedi scouts had marked their exodus to this underground refuge, and he knew General Hoth wouldn't wait long before coming after him. The cavern, though large, was crowded with the rest of the Brotherhood. Every surviving Sith Lord, with the notable exception of Darth Bane, was gathered with him here to make their final stand. The rest of his army was guarding the main entrances to the subterranean tunnels, with orders to hold off the inevitable Jedi attack for as long as possible. Eventually those outside would be overwhelmed, but Khan was confident their numbers would delay Hoth long enough for the ritual of the Thought Bomb to be completed.
Gather round, he called out to the others. It is time!
Githany knew there was something very wrong with Lord Khan. She had suspected something was amiss when they had fled the arriving Jedi reinforcements. When they landed back at camp, Khan had disappeared into the communications tent, then reappeared moments later and gone into his own tent without speaking a word. But when he emerged from his tent, the irresistible force of his charisma was back in place. He came to them then not as a defeated leader seeking to make amends, but as a conquering hero, defiant and unbowed. He stood proud, the picture of might and glory. He spoke to them, his voice strong and his words bold, radiating authority. He spoke of leading them in a joining of their minds, a ritual that would far surpass the one Bane had led them in only hours earlier. He told them of a terrible weapon they would unleash against their foes. He rekindled their faith and hope by revealing the existence of the Thought Bomb. He had promised them victory, as he'd done so many times before. And, as they'd always done in the past, the Brotherhood had followed him once again. Followed him here to this cave. Though Githany wasn't sure if it was more accurate to say that they'd been led or lured. She'd followed him along with everyone else, compelled by the passion of his words and the sheer magnitude of his personality and presence. All thoughts that he might be unstable or unfit to lead them had been forgotten in the heady pilgrimage through the night to the shelter of this cave. Once they reached their destination, though, the exhilarating rush had faded away, replaced by a stark and undeniable clarity. And she had finally seen the truth, revealed in the illumination of the glow rods, reflected in the crystals of the cavern walls. Khan's appearance and garb weren't unusual, apart from the dust, grime, and blood of the recent battle. But now Githany could see a crazed look in his eyes.
They were wide and wild and shone with a fierce intensity, sparkling as brightly as the crystal shards all around them. Those eyes brought back memories of the night she'd surprised Khan in his tent. The night she had seen her vision of Bane's return. He had looked disheveled and frantic, lost and confused. For a brief moment she had glimpsed him as he truly was. A false prophet, unable to see past his own delusions. And then the flickering vision had disappeared, forgotten, until this instant. Now, however, the memory came flooding back, and Githany knew she was following a madman. The arrival of the Jedi reinforcements and the shocking defeat had caused something inside him to snap. Khan was leading them to their doom, and none of the others could sense it. She didn't dare to speak out against him, not here in this cave, surrounded by his once again fanatically loyal followers. She wanted to sneak away, slip quietly off into the darkness beyond the radiance of the glow rods, and escape this horrible fate. But she was caught up by the crush of bodies that surged forward at Khan's command.
Gather in. Closer. Form a circle. A ring of power.
She felt his hand grab her tightly by the wrist and pull her in so that her body pressed up against his. Even in the chill of the cave, his touch was freezing.
Stand beside me, Githany, he whispered. We will share in this moment of exaltation.
Loudly he shouted,
Join your hands as we must join our minds!
The fingers of his right hand wrapped around her left, seizing it in a grip cold as ice and unyielding as durasteel. One of the other Sith Lords took her other hand, and she knew all hope of escape was gone. Beside her, Khan began to chant. Githany was not the only one who sensed something wrong with Lord Khan. Like all the others, Lord Kopej had been swept up in the excitement of the thought bomb. He had cheered with all the rest when Khan described how it would obliterate the Jedi and imprison their spirits. And he had eagerly joined in the throng that had followed him to the cave. Now, however, his zeal had faded. He was thinking rationally again, and he realized the plan was utter insanity. They were at ground zero of the thought bomb's detonation. Any weapon powerful enough to destroy the Jedi would destroy them too. Khan had promised them that the strength of their combined will would allow them to survive the blast. But now Kopej had his doubts. The promise stank of wishful thinking birthed from a desperate mind that refused to admit defeat. If Khan had had this thought bomb all along, why hadn't he used it before? The only logical answer was that he was afraid of the consequences. And though Khan, in his madness, may have let go of that fear, Kopej was still sane enough to cling to his. The rest of the Sith pressed forward in response to Khan's command, but Kopej fought against the momentum of the crowd and moved in the opposite direction. None of the others seemed to notice. A wall of bodies surrounded Khan, blocking much of the light from the glow rods. In the shadows, the Twi'lek moved carefully toward the cavern's main exit, surprisingly silent for such a large being. He didn't turn or look back as he entered the tunnel to the surface, and picked up his pace only once he heard the Brotherhood begin a slow, rhythmic chant. Escape was impossible, of course, but now the Jedi would already have the entire tunnel complex surrounded. Soon, they would engage the Sith troops out on the surface, trying to break through their barricade to come after Khan and end the last great battle of Rusan. Kopej didn't know if they would make it in time. Part of him actually hoped they would. In the end, though, he wanted to make sure it didn't matter to him. He joined the defenders on the surface in one last stand against the Jedi. Death was inevitable. He was willing to accept that fact. But he also knew he'd rather die from a lightsaber or a blaster shot than be caught by the thought bomb's detonation. The chant was simple, and after repeating it only once, Khan was joined by the rest of the Brotherhood. They recited the unfamiliar catechism in a steady, constant rhythm. Their voices bounced off the cavern walls, the ancient words mixing and mingling in counterpoint as they echoed throughout the cave.
Githany could feel the power beginning to gather in the center of the ring, like a fierce whirlpool spinning faster and faster. She felt the pull on her conscious thoughts as they were dragged down, her awareness, her mind, and even her identity swallowed up in the vortex. The cool dampness of the cave faded, as did the reverberation of their voices. She could no longer smell the mildew and fungus growing in the hidden corners or feel the pressure of the hands that gripped her own. Finally, the shimmering of the reflective crystals and the pale light from the glow rods melted away.
"We are one." The voice was Khan's, yet it was hers as well. "We are the dark side. The dark side is us."
Though she could no longer hear the sound of their chanting, she could sense it, even as her mind slipped deeper and deeper into the center. Realizing she would soon lose both the ability and the desire to free herself from Khan's ritual, she tried to fight against what was happening to her. It was like swimming against the relentless undertow of an ocean's heart. She felt the words of the recurring mantra taking physical shape. They wrapped around their collective will, trapping it, shaping it, and binding it into a rapidly coalescing form.
"Feel the power of the dark side. Surrender to it. Surrender to the unified whole. Let us become one."
From deep within herself, Githany summoned her last reserves of resistance. Somehow, they were enough, and she was able to wrench her mind free from the unholy conclave. She staggered back with a gasp, her sense crashing over her like floodwaters bursting through a retaining wall. Sight, sound, smell, and touch returned all at once, overwhelming her frantic mind. The light from the glow rods had grown faint and dim, as if it too was being swallowed by the ritual. The chant continued, so loud now, it actually hurt her ears. The temperature had dropped so sharply that she was able to see her breath, and tiny crystals of frost had begun to form on the stalactites and along the edges of the tiny puddles and pools. Suddenly she realized that neither Khan nor anyone else had a grip on her hands. They were all standing in the ring, arms raised toward its center, oblivious to the world around them. At first it looked as if they were grasping at nothing. But as her eyes adjusted to the gloom, she caught sight of a strange distortion in the air. Githany couldn't bear to look at it for more than a moment. There was something terrible and unnatural about the wavering fabric of reality, and she turned away in horror.
"Bane was right," she realized. "Khan has brought us to ruin."
There was a faint tug on her mind, a gentle pull that was quickly growing stronger, threatening to draw her in with the others. She stumbled away from the profane ceremony and its doomed celebrants, squinting to see her way along the uneven footing.
"Bane tried to warn me, but I wouldn't listen." Her thoughts were a chaotic jumble of regret, desperation, and fear.
Even as one part of her brain chastised her for her mistake, another was forcing her to back away from the abomination being birthed by the Brotherhood. Her retreat brought her to one of the cavern walls, and she followed along it, looking for a way out. The compulsion of the ritual was growing stronger. She could feel it calling to her, inviting her to join the others and share their fate. She had no plan, no sense of where she was going. She simply had to escape, flee, get out, get away from here, before she was sucked in once again. A small space opened in the stone, a narrow tunnel entrance just wide enough for her to sneak through. She squeezed her body into the crevice, the jagged stone slicing through cloth and skin. The pain was nothing to her. The physical world was slipping away again. Desperately, Githany managed to throw herself forward, crashing to the ground, then crawled frantically on her hands and knees down the tunnel. Away. She had to get away. Away from the ritual. Away from Khan. Away from the thought bomb before it was too late.
The Sith soldiers guarding the entrance to the subterranean tunnels were strong in number but weak in spirit. They offered only token resistance to Farfalla and the rest of the Jedi advance units who came against them. The last battle of Rusan quickly transformed into a mass surrender, with the enemy throwing down their weapons and begging for their lives. Farfalla walked among his troops, surveying the scene. General Hoth was close behind with the bulk of the army. He'd be surprised to find the war already over when he arrived.
How goes it?
Farfalla asked one of the unit commanders.
The Sith troops have us outnumbered 3-1, the commander answered gruffly. And they're all trying to surrender at the same time. This is going to take a while.
Farfalla gave him a hearty laugh and slapped him on the shoulder.
Well said, he agreed. Sometimes I think people only follow the Sith because they know we'll take them alive if they lose.
Don't you dare take me alive, Farfalla,
a voice gurgled. Turning his head sharply, he saw a heavy-set Twi'lek lying wounded on the ground. The injured Twi'lek struggled to his feet, and Farfalla was surprised to see that he wore the robes of a Sith lord. His face was so covered in blood and gore, most of it his own, that it took the Jedi a moment to recognize him.
Kopesh,
he said at last, remembering him from days long gone, back when Kopesh had been a Jedi.
You're hurt,
Farfalla continued, extending his hand in an offer of friendship.
Lay down your weapons and we can help you.
The Twi'lek's meaty hand lashed out to slap him away.
I chose my side long ago,
he spat.
Promise me death, Jedi, and I will give you a warning. I will tell you Khan's plan.
One look at the Dark Lord's wounds told Farfalla his enemy didn't have long to live in any case.
What do you know?
Kopesh coughed, choking on the blood welling up in his throat.
Promise me first,
he wheezed.
I will grant you death, if that is what you truly seek. I swear it.
The Twi'lek laughed, pink froth bubbling up on his lips.
Good. Death is an old friend. What Khan has planned is far worse.
And he told Farfalla about the thought bomb, his words sending a chill down the Jedi Master's spine. When Kopesh had finished, he bowed his head and took a deep breath to gather his strength, then activated his lightsaber.
You promised me death, he said. I wish to fall in combat. If you hold back at all, you will be the one who dies here today. Do you understand?
Master Farfalla nodded grimly, igniting his own weapon. Lord Kopesh fought valiantly, despite his wounds, though he was no match for a fresh and uninjured Jedi Master. In the end, Farfalla fulfilled his promise. Chapter 31. The scene that greeted General Hoth as his army came upon the battlefield was as unexpected as it was welcome. He had braced himself for a vision of grim and bloody slaughter, fierce combat with neither side giving nor asking quarter. He'd imagined the corpses of the dead would be strewn about, trampled beneath the feet of those still fighting desperately to hang on to their lives. He had come expecting to see a war. Instead, he was witness to something so unbelievable, his initial reaction was one of suspicion. Was it a trick? A trap? His fears were quickly allayed when he recognized the familiar and smiling faces of other Jedi all around him. As he surveyed the aftermath of the last Battle of Rusan, his own face broke into a smile. There were only a handful of dead, and from their dress it was clear that few of them had served in the Army of Light. Most of the enemy had been taken prisoner. They were sitting calmly on the ground in large groups, surrounded by armed Jedi. Yet even though the Jedi were keeping close watch on their captured foes, they were laughing and joking with one another. He reached out with the Force and he felt wave after wave of relief and joy washing out from Farfalla's troops. The soldiers under his command were quick to feel it too. Seeing the obvious victory, they broke ranks and ran cheering and laughing down to join their fellows in celebration. Hoth resisted the urge to shout out a command to regroup and simply let them go. The endless war was over. But as he walked through the milling throngs, accepting the salutes and congratulations of his followers, he realized something was wrong. The battlefield was full of placid, unarmed Sith, but he saw not a single Dark Lord among their numbers. The sight of Master Farfalla running at full speed toward him from the far side of the field did little to soothe his unease.
General!
Farfalla said, sliding to a stop and gasping for breath. He snapped off a quick salute. The lack of his typical over-the-top bow further fueled Hoth's mounting concern.
I must have taken longer to assemble my forces than I thought,
the general joked, hoping his disquiet was simply misplaced paranoia.
It seems you've already won the war.
Farfalla shook his head.
The war isn't over. Not yet. Khan and the Brotherhood, the true Sith, have taken refuge in the caves. They're going to unleash some kind of Sith weapon, something called a thought bomb.
A thought bomb?
Hoth had heard mention of such a weapon long ago, studying at the feet of his master back at the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. According to legendary accounts, the ancient Sith had the ability to forge the dark side into a concentrated sphere of power, and then unleash its energy in a single, devastating blast. All those sensitive to the Force, Sith and Jedi alike, would be consumed by the explosion, their spirits trapped in the great vacuum created at the epicenter of the detonation.
Is Khan mad?
He said aloud, though the very question was answer enough.
We have to evacuate, General, Farfalla insisted. Get everyone away as fast as possible.
No, Hoth answered. That won't work. If we retreat, Khan and the Brotherhood will escape. It won't take them long to rally support and begin this war all over again.
But what about the thought bomb? Valenfine demanded.
If Khan has such a weapon, the general explained grimly, then he will use it. If not here, then somewhere else. Maybe in the core worlds. Maybe on Coruscant itself. I can't allow that. Khan wants to witness my death. I have to go into the cave to face him. I have to force him to detonate the bomb here on Rusan. It's the only way to truly end this.
Farfalla dropped to one knee.
Then I will go by your side, General, as will all who follow me.
Reaching out with his strong, weathered hands, General Hoth took Farfalla by the shoulders and hauled him to his feet.
No, my friend,
he said with a sigh.
You cannot walk this journey with me.
When the other started to protest, he held up a hand for silence and continued.
When Khan unleashes his weapon, all within that cave will die. The Sith will be wiped out, but I won't let that happen to our entire order. The galaxy will have need of Jedi to rebuild once this war is over. You and the other masters must live, so that you may guide them and defend the Republic, as we've done since its foundation.
There was no real argument against the wisdom of his words, and after a moment's deliberation, Master Farfalla dropped his head in mute acceptance. When he looked up again, there were tears in his eyes.
Surely you're not going in alone, he protested.
I wish I could, Hoth replied. But if I do, the Dark Lords will simply take me down with their lightsabers. That would solve nothing. Khan has to see that his only chance is to surrender. Or...
He left the thought unspoken.
You'll need enough Jedi to convince the Brotherhood that a physical battle would be hopeless. At least 100. Any less, and he won't detonate the thought bomb.
Hoth nodded.
Nobody will be ordered to go in with me. Ask for volunteers, and make sure they understand none of us will ever be coming out.
Despite the danger, virtually every single member of the Army of Light volunteered for the mission. General Hoth realized that he shouldn't have been surprised. After all, these were Jedi, willing to sacrifice everything, even their lives, for the greater good. In the end, he did what he knew he would have to do all along. He himself chose who would accompany him to certain death. He selected exactly 99 others to go with him. The decision was agonizingly difficult. If he took less, the Sith might be able to fight their way out of the cave and escape, only to detonate their thought bomb somewhere else. But the more he took, the more Jedi lives he might be needlessly throwing away. Choosing who would go with him was even more difficult. Those Jedi who had served at his side the longest, the ones who had joined the Army of Light at the very beginning of the campaign, were those he knew best. He knew how much they'd already given in this war, and these were the ones he least wanted to lead to their doom. Yet these were the ones with the most right to stand by his side when the end finally came. and when all was said and done, that was how he made his selection. Those with the most seniority would go with him. The others would fall back with Lord Farfalla. The 100 Jedi, the 99 chosen plus Hoth himself, stood anxiously at the entrance of the tunnels. The sky above was growing dark as night fell and ominous storm clouds rolled in. Still, the general did not give the command to advance. He wanted to give Farfalla and the others enough time to get clear. If it had been possible, he would have ordered all those not going into the cave to leave Rusan. But there wasn't time. They would simply have to get as far away as possible, then hope they were beyond the range of Khan's thought bomb. As the first drops of rain began to fall, he realized he could wait no longer, and he gave the command to advance. They marched in an orderly fashion into the tunnel, down into the caverns far beneath the planet's surface. The first thing Hoth noticed as they descended was how cold the tunnel quickly became, as if all the heat had been sucked away. The next thing he felt was the tension in the air. It actually pulsed with vast, unimaginable power just barely held in check. The power of the dark side. He didn't allow himself to think about what would happen when that power was released. They advanced slowly, wary of traps or an ambush. They found none. In fact, they saw no sign of the Sith at all, until they reached the large central cavern at the heart of the tunnel system. General Hoth led the way, a glow rod in one hand and his drawn lightsaber in the other. As he stepped into the cavern, his glow rod suddenly flickered and went very dim. Even the illumination from his lightsaber seemed to die, becoming the thinnest sliver of incandescence. As his eyes grew accustomed to the heavy shadows, he was able to pick out the shapes of the Sith Lords, standing in a circle on the far side of the cave. They faced inward, their hands raised to its center. They stood without moving, their mouths hanging open, their features slack, their eyes blank. Cautiously, he approached the still forms, wondering if they were alive, dead, or trapped in some nightmare state in between. Drawing closer, he could make out a single figure standing in the center of the circle. Lord Khan. He hadn't seen him at first. The middle of the ring was darker than the rest of the cave. There seemed to be a black cloud hovering above him, tendrils of inky darkness extending down to wrap and twist around him in a sinister embrace. One look at the leader of the Brotherhood and any hope the general had of convincing Lord Khan to listen to reason died. The Sith Lord's face was pale and taut. His features were stretched as if his skin had become too tight for his skull. A thin layer of ice coated his hair and lashes. His expression was one of cruel arrogance, and his left eye trembled and twitched uncontrollably. He stared straight ahead with a frozen intensity, unblinking and unmoving as Hoth and his Jedi slowly filled the cavern. Only after all the Jedi were inside did he speak.
"Welcome, Lord Hoth."
His voice was tight and strained.
"Are you trying to scare me, Khan?"
Hoth asked, stepping forward.
"I do not fear death," he continued. "I do not mind dying. I would not mind all the Jedi dying if it meant the end of the Sith."
Khan turned his head quickly from one side to the other, his eyes darting back and forth across the cave, as if he were counting the Jedi who stood before him. His lip curled into a sneer, and he raised his hands up. The general made his move, lunging forward to try to end Khan's life before he could unleash his ultimate weapon. He wasn't quick enough. The Dark Lord clapped his hands together sharply, and the thought bomb exploded. In an instant, every living soul in the cave was snuffed out of existence. Clothing, flesh, and bone were vaporized. The stalactites, the stalagmites, even the massive stone columns were reduced to clouds of dust. The rumbling echo of the blast rolled down every tunnel, crevice, and fissure leading out of the cavern as the destructive wave of energy began to spread. Giffany was trapped in the labyrinth of subterranean passages. In fleeing Khan's ritual, she'd lost her bearings, and now she wandered aimlessly down kilometer after kilometer of natural tunnels as she searched in vain for an exit to the surface. In the dim light of her glow rod, she saw a small opening on her left and followed it for many meters before it came to a dead end. Shouting out a curse, she turned and made her way back again. She was furious,